Calvin normally maintained that no one should ever presume that she or he has been predestined for salvation. But nevertheless, the seeds of an idea are there. And after Calvin's own death, many of his disciples inclined toward the view that the success of our works, our success in leading this moral and holy life, is a kind of presumptive evidence that we've been elected towards salvation. And I stress this because you need to see that this was a very great source of energy, confidence, and strength for Calvinists. One might say, if you've been predestined to salvation or to damnation, there's nothing you can do about it. You might as well just sit there and let the inevitable unroll. But if you take up the idea that if you can see yourself living this holy and sinless life, then that is at least presumptive evidence that you have been predestined for salvation, that does tend to energize people. And indeed, Calvinism tended to spread much more quickly than Lutheranism in early modern Europe. Lutheranism ended up being confined largely to the German-speaking part of Central Europe. There were some extensions in Scandinavia. But it's really Calvinism that spreads much more rapidly, not only over Europe, but also to New England, in the subsequent United States. A second source of energy for Calvinists, besides this idea of perhaps being able to discern your own election in the success of your life, is the organization of the church itself. Calvin always said that if the church's preaching is not to be in vain, it will have to practice a kind of constant self-examination in order to avoid error. And it must also have resort to ecclesiastical discipline. The reason that the church needs discipline is that although it cannot screen out those who are not members of the elect, it can't tell who's been elected to salvation, who isn't, it has to therefore assume that it will have sinners in its own midst. Nonetheless, the church cannot tolerate disorder, it cannot tolerate immorality, it cannot tolerate scandal, because all of this would be an affront to God. And the discipline in a Calvinist church is thus both a means of preserving order and doctrinal purity, and also a necessary support of the believer's efforts towards sanctification. If that's the theory, how does it work in practice? Well, discipline in a Calvinist church is usually administered by the consistory, which is a council composed of 12 elders and also the pastor. The consistory exercise rather close moral supervision over the lives of the community. All games, all dancing, all costuming, and all these kinds of things were banned because they were considered to be a kind of Catholic pollution, or a papist pollution, as the Calvinists would put it. If we look at the actual regulations of the Calvinist church, we find that at least in France, at least a fifth of all of the regulations are concerned with what would be called feminine frivolity. That is to say that the consistories would ban alluring cosmetics or towering hairstyles or plunging necklines as being immoral. Indeed, in 1597 in the town of Montauban, the consistory asked the town council to forbid all strolling musicians, people playing the violin, whose performances, the consistory felt, would entail curiosity, debauchery, waste of time and money. The consistory, in fact, went so far as to send out reliable members of the flock to listen at windows in the evening time for the telltale sounds of violins tuning up for performances so that this could be stopped. Now, having presented this fairly austere kind of lifestyle, we may ask, well, why would this religion spread in France in the first place? And in all fairness, I think we have to say that there's no clear answer for that. Historians disagree fairly seriously on this issue, but we can probably say that there are four basic approaches to explaining the spread of Calvinism in France, and there's important truth in each, but also important limitations in each. The first classic explanation is a kind of argument from push rather than from pull. That is to say, it's not so much that people are positively attracted to Calvinism as they're repelled by the abuses and corruption of the Roman Catholic Church. Now, the evidence for these abuses is very convincing and it's very widespread. It's pretty clear that there were a lot of complaints about the immorality of the clergy, the greed of the clergy. There was a lot of absenteeism, pastors who were supposed to be active in a parish and not really being there. There was also pluralism, that is to say, pastors who kept jobs in multiple parishes, collected income from multiple parishes, and never gave any single one of them all of their attentions. There was simony, the buying and selling of church offices. There was ignorance. There were all kinds of complaints. In fact, the Roman Catholic Church itself was very well aware of this. Nevertheless, there are two essential points that need to be kept in mind about this push rather than pull argument. First of all, there were many voices for reform within the church, and objections to actual religious practices in the Catholic Church didn't necessarily require you to adopt a completely different religious doctrine. Second of all, In the end, the overwhelming majority of French people remain Catholic. In fact, what we're going to see in subsequent lectures is there was more or less an identification in many people's eyes between being French and being Catholic. To be French meant to be Catholic. And indeed, in the end, the challenge of the Huguenots, as French Calvinists came to be called, would ultimately be swamped by a vicious backlash of popular Catholicism.